He propped his father's weapon on the ground, tilting it up against the polished, well-hung doors, and resting a shaft aslant the bow's fine horn. Then back he went to the seat that he had left. "Up, friends," Antinous called, taking over. "One man after another, left to right, starting from where the steward pours the wine." So Antinous urged, and all agreed. The first man up was Leodes, Enops's son, a seer who could see their futures in the smoke, who always sat by the glowing wine bowl well back, the one man in the group who loathed their reckless ways, appalled by all their outrage. His turn first. Picking up the weapon now and the swift arrow, he stood at the threshold, poised to try the bow, but failed to bend it. As soon as he tugged the string, his hands went slack, his soft, uncalloused hands. And he called back to the suitors, "Friends, I can't bend it. Take it, someone. Try. Here is a bow to rob our best of life and breath, all our best contenders. Still better be dead than live on here, never winning the prize that tempts us all, forever in pursuit, burning with expectation every day. If there's still a suitor here who hopes, who aches to marry Penelope, Odysseus's wife, just let him try the bow. He'll see the truth. He'll soon lay siege to another Argive woman trailing her long robes and shower her with gifts, and then our queen can marry the one who offers most, the man marked out by fate to be her husband." With those words he thrust the bow aside, tilting it up against the polished well-hung doors, and resting a shaft aslant the bow's fine horn, then back he went to the seat that he had left. But Antinous turned on the seer, abuses flying. "Leodes, what are you saying? What's got past your lips? What awful, grisly nonsense? It shocks me to hear it. Here is a bow to rob our best of life and breath. Just because you can't string it, you're so weak. Clearly your genteel mother never bred her boy for the work of bending bows and shooting arrows. We have champions in our ranks to string it quickly. Hop to it, Melanthius," he barked at the goatherd. "Break the fire in the hall, pull up a big stool, heap it with fleece, and fetch that hefty ball of lard from the stores inside, so we young lords can heat and limber the bow and rub it down with grease before we try again and finish off the contest." The goatherd bustled about to rake the fire, still going strong. He pulled up a big stool, heaped it with fleece, and fetched the hefty ball of lard from the stores inside. And the young men limbered the bow, rubbing it down with hot grease, then struggled to bend it back, but failed. No use. They fell far short of the strength the bow required. Antinous still held off, dashing Eurymachus too, the ringleaders of all the suitors, head and shoulders the strongest of the lot. But now the king's two men, the cowherd and the swineherd, had slipped out of the palace side by side, and great Odysseus left the house to join them. Once they were past the courtyard and the gates, he probed them deftly, surely. "Cowherd, swineherd, what, shall I blurt this out, or keep it to myself?" "No, speak out, the heart inside me says so. How far would you go to fight beside Odysseus? Say he dropped like that from a clear blue sky, and a god brought him back. Would you fight for the suitors, or your king? Tell me how you feel inside your hearts." "Father Zeus," the trusty cowherd shouted, "bring my prayer to pass, let the master come. Some god guide him now. You'd see my power, my fighting arms in action." Eumaeus echoed his prayer to all the gods, that their wise king would soon come home again. Certain at least these two were loyal to the death, Odysseus reassured them quickly. "I am right here in the flesh, myself, and home at last, after bearing 20 years of brutal hardship. Now I know that of all my men you two alone longed for my return. From the rest I've heard not one real prayer that I come back again, so now I'll